are listening to the cycling podcast De Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour,
the home of cycling with character.
Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run. Stage 18. Today we are in Becerril de la Sierra.
Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Rich. How's it going?
A bit of a delay there. A bit of a delay on the line, but you're sitting beside me. What's going on?
I just got a surprising text message. Anyway.
Surprise in what way?
I'm not going to elaborate. Come on, let's carry on.
Well, where are we, Daniel?
We're in, is it Collado Villaba?
Or well, you tell
Collado
me.
Mediano. It's one of them. Outside, it's a... Well, we're at the foot of the range of mountains that are yesterday called the Sierra de Madrid. It's also called the Sierra de Guadarrama.
I was going to say, is it the Guadarrama?
Correct. We're about 10 kilometers from today's finish. We're drinking a nice bottle of Mao, which is a Madrid beer, Rich. I don't know if you saw the big brewery.
Yeah,
I think it's the main Mao brewery on the sort of northern ring road around Madrid yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, as we entered this area, Daniel, I noticed a long, low cloud lifting slowly above the southern horizon, a purple haze above the quivering plain, the first sign of the approaching Sierras. After the monotonous wheat fields, it was like a landfall, the distant coastline of another country. And as I walked, it climbed steadily till it filled half the sky, the immense east-west barrier of the Guadarrama.
Hemingway?
Laurie Lee.
Oh. Did Hemingway spend any time in Spain? Must have.
Oh, goodness
me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, big bullfighting aficionado, wasn't he?
Of course, of course.
Death in the Afternoon. This is Laurie Lee's memoir, As I Walked Out One Midsummer Morning, about his travels around Spain. I'll maybe read a bit more of that. Who knows? Some fascinating stuff in there, and he writes beautifully. Anyway, Daniel, the stage today...
Enough chin stroking.
Yeah, the stage today didn't live up to expectations, did
it?
Or did you find it exciting?
Was today a bit of a letdown?
No, not at all. I think it was good.
I think it was very exciting, the last 60 kilometres.
Yeah, well, it was exciting for EF Education First because Sergio Higuita, their 22-year-old, who only signed mid-season, didn't he, for the team? He joined in May, riding his first Grand Tour, and he won the stage. And that is a fantastic story for them because they lost three, not one, not two, but three leaders in this race. So they've been battling on, and not many teams have actually even won stages, really. A lot of World Tour teams going home empty-handed at the moment. So a great result for them and for him. He was part of a 14-man break that was actually started by Remy Cavagna, the Koenigsegg step rider, who was up there in the break yesterday all day.
On the Tour de France, did you drive past the big Cavagna furniture factory outside Clermont-Ferrand?
No.
Which I think
well,
is his
maybe
family.
We did.
His That's dad is in the furniture business, and there was a huge Cavagna furniture warehouse just outside Clermont-Ferrand, which I presume is something to do with him.
Furniture?
Yes.
Interesting. Last night, yesterday, we learned that Tim de Klerk's father is a singing comedian in Belgium, and I wonder what the parents of other De Koenig Quickstep riders do. Anyway, Wout Poels was on the attack, so we haven't seen an awful lot of him in this race, but he was quite aggressive fairly early on, and a 14-man break really sort of coalesced around him. Theo Gegenhardt, his teammate, was up there as well. So was Geoffrey Bouchard, the King of the Mountains at the moment. Higuita was there, Tobias Ludvigsen from Groupama FDJ, and Louis Menkes and Ben King, double stage winner last year, of course, both from Dimension Data. That was a decent-looking group, and as we'll hear later on, they had a good chance of staying away until the guys behind began chasing, and Miguel Angel Lopez in particular was very aggressive, keen to make amends, I suppose, for yesterday and haul himself back onto the podium. Yeah, Higuita was the only guy to stay away from that breakaway. In fact, he went very early, tacked about 50 kilometres remaining of the stage, so it did really well to hold on for that length of time. And there was a lot of action behind it. I mean, Quintana, having gained 5 minutes yesterday, lost a few minutes today. He was a bit of a loser today, and so was Tadej Pogacar.
Pogacar. Pog.
I can't say it. Just say Pog. Pog. They both lost a bit of time. So the Higuita was the winner. Primož Roglič, the red jersey, out-sprinted Alejandro Valverde for second, 15 seconds down. They were in a group of four with Rafał Majka and Miguel Ángel López, who actually just lost a couple of seconds on the run-in. And then it was Carl Fredrik Hagen who led in the next little group, which contained Quintana. And it was a minute down on those guys.
What an incredible Vuelta he's having, Hagen.
Incredible.
For a guy who started the year, I remember at the Lotto Soudal training camp in Mallorca, Marc Sargeant, the team manager, talking about him and really admitting that they'd taken a complete punt on him. They suspected that he was someone who would go okay in the World Tour. His physical tests suggested he was quite a well-rounded athlete, could do various different things, but they really didn't know. They were quite taken aback at first by how sort of exuberant he was. I think Norwegian riders have a bit of a reputation in the peloton for being quite dour. Well, that's maybe slightly harsh, but not the most sort of effusive characters. And Hagen is quite an extrovert.
We're going to hear that
later on. He's not Norwegian, is he? He's Danish.
No, he's Norwegian.
He's Norwegian.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did I have a moment's... It's because the Danish TV crew are always interviewing the Norwegians. Do you know why? Because
Scandinavian.
No, because the Norwegians can understand Danish perfectly and vice versa.
All right.
So they don't even have to translate.
Well, we're going to hear from Carl Fredrik Hagen a bit later on. Pogacar was in that group as well. And so on GC, I mean, Roglic is in a better position than he was last night because Quintana dropped from second to third. Valverde... back up to second, so he's leading the Movistar classification again. Miguel Ángel López, decent day for him, moved up one place from fifth to fourth, and Pogacar, I know I say it different every time.
No, that's all right. Pog
slipped down a place. Good day for Rafał Majka, we'll hear from him as well. He moved up to sixth overall. And James Knox, who was in the break yesterday, slipped down a place. He lost about 4 minutes. He's down to ninth overall.
It was
Carl Fredrik Hagen.
It's tough doing the tail of the tapper, isn't it?
It is tough now. That's why I try and avoid it. Jeffrey Bouchard is still in the King of Mountains. Looks very good for that. The Young Riders jersey is really the most competitive jersey in the entire race, isn't it? Superman has gone ahead of Pogacar, and James Knox is third in that. And today's stage runner, Sergio Higuita, is fourth. But at 27 minutes 52. My goodness, what's going on?
Oh, no, it's all kicking off. Sorry.
Can you not even put the sound down on that?
Yeah, I will.
Mean,
sorry.
Sorry.
Oh, no.
Yellow card.
It's all kicking
yellow
off. Come on.
The fastest clothing in the world tour. The home of cycling with Cat. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa for supporting the cycling podcast, as they have done for so long now. And a little reminder that this Sunday is the annual Women's 100 that Rafa organised. We had a cycling podcast, Femina Women's 100, last year. Sadly, Hannah Nicklin, who organised that, moved abroad, so it's not happening this year. But lots of rides happening all over the world, 100-kilometre rides, or you can do your own. Look up hashtag Women's 100 on Twitter, and you'll see lots of information about that. And also on the rafa.cc website, there is a page all about the Women's 100, how to get involved, and a bit of the history of it too. So, Daniel, you were obviously bowled over by today's stage. We're going to hear from Orla Shenouin in a moment, because we were looking back at yesterday's stage and got a bit more reaction from that. But today's stage, it wasn't the last chance, but you know, Roglic, after a wobble yesterday, looked pretty impenetrable today.
Yeah, Rog is looking pretty bulletproof, isn't he?
Rog the Rock.
I enjoy watching him because he's so stoic, and he almost revels in his own sort of uncommunicative nature. He sort of
came into the press caravan yesterday, and there was a Spanish journalist there who he's obviously made some kind of connection with, and he actually looked at him and smiled and said, "Hola, amigo."
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it was quite sweet. Yeah, people say, his teammates say he's very funny. I can
well
imagine that.
I asked George Benn about that, and he didn't really confirm that.
Different kind of humour. Anyway, Rog, he's running an incredible race, notwithstanding the absolute cock-up yesterday, which we got a little bit more clarity on today. So, as I understand it, Rich, and what I was told by Addy Engels...
Well, we're going to hear from Addy Engels a bit later on.
Sorry about that, spoiler. But Paulus and Tony Martin were definitely in the front group. So Jumbo-Visma had at least two in the front group, and then they effectively had to come back, and it was in the kind of confusion of them coming back and the sort of reorganisation that the gap started to go out. But the Jumbo-Visma DSs were quite critical of Rog. I asked Rog tonight whether he'd sort of held his hand up at dinner and done a big kind of mea culpa in front of his teammates.
Please, sir, can I have some more?
Well, no, and said, you know, and apologised profusely to his teammates last night over dinner. His response to that was, well, he took a swig of beer. He brought beer into the press room, into the mix zone. I think, to be fair, I think it was a non-alcoholic beer, but he took a beer into the mix zone tonight, took a swig and said, no, you know, when things like that happen, it's never one person's fault. So kind of not abdicating all responsibility, but suggesting that he wasn't the only one at fault yesterday. That aside, he's ridden an incredible race because he's actually been isolated a fair amount. And well, today, you know, he was isolated intermittently for the sort of 50 kilometres or so.
You can say all the leaders were.
Yes, yeah, but, you know, he has definitely been helped by, you know, yesterday he was helped by Astana, which is not necessarily to criticise Astana, although I did put it to Vino this morning, Alexander Vinokurov, that, you know, they'd say Pogacar yesterday, Rog, I put it to him that they'd saved Rog yesterday and he almost punched me. Vino.
Could have landed himself in jail for that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mention the impending possible jail sentence. He has been helped by the different interests of different teams at different times. I mean, even today, Lopez was sort of...
Superman.
What am I doing?
This is terrible.
He was riding really to put himself back in the mix, in the shakeup, and ended up benefiting Rog because it put more time into Quintana. So he has been helped. Mm.
He's ridden a la Roglic. Lopez definitely ridden a la Lopez. Quintana's ridden a la Quintana, and Valverde's ridden a la Valverde. So if I could go on, but they've all kind of ridden to type, haven't they? I mean, there was excitement last night. Quintana had hauled himself back, and you know, but there was a fear, and I think a lot of riders paid today for their efforts yesterday. I heard Theo Gegenhardt say that yesterday was the hardest stage of the whole race in terms of numbers put out and so on. So that will have taken its toll on a lot of these guys, and maybe not so much Roglic, because I don't think he had to do an awful lot in the end yesterday.
No, it was interesting talking to a couple of riders just about their sort of power files yesterday and how it all sort of stacked up and what an unusual day it was, because they simply don't do many days, whether it be in training or in races, where they're on the limit for 4 hours. And I got the sense that a lot of them didn't really have a precedent for that, and they didn't, consequently, they had no idea how they were going to recover from it, because they're used to, you know, mountain stages where, okay, they're doing sort of threshold efforts for, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes at a time, and then there's a bit of respite, and then they go again. Something like yesterday was quite unusual. It was almost like a 3 or 4 hour time trial for some guys. But Valverde, for example, was insistent that he hadn't spent that much energy yesterday, that he'd been in the wheels most of the time. I suppose Rog had been in the wheels as well a lot of the time. Yeah, I think some people definitely, well, they must have paid for yesterday, mustn't they?
Yeah, two guys who had good days today, having missed out yesterday, and one of them, Rafał Majka, was very, very angry at the finish yesterday, and it transpired today when we spoke to him at the finish that he was angry really with himself. So grabbed a quick word with him at the finish, and also the aforementioned Carl Fredrik Hagen, the revelation really of this race. Let's hear first from Micah and then from Hagen.
I'm happy when I stay with my teammates, and yeah, it's like, you know, the cycling yesterday we lose, I think so it's my fault then, because I should be there, and this 45 guys then should be more easy, and now it's difficult to recover at this position, but I'm so happy then I, you know, I'm all the time there with the best climbers, and actually today I try to win the stage, but we try the best. I don't want to bring Nairo and Bogacar with me, then I jump to these three guys and I only follow, and in the end, yeah, make some change, but we try. It's still one stage and we keep fighting. Everything is happening like yesterday, then yeah, I feel good. Actually, then 3 days to Madrid.
Roglic?
From this Vuelta is really strong, but from yesterday, when it's now close, this gap, the Astana, then for sure we don't come in 5 minutes or six. It's more than 10 minutes, then and it's also luck for him. But this Dimos Ren is really strong in this Vuelta, and for sure he's win.
Earlier in the race, you know, when you were flying high overall, you're still there. I think, are you, you know, how did you find today?
I felt good. I think everyone's starting getting tired, but I recovered fast, and I was not feeling more tired this morning than yesterday morning, so I also felt I had a lot of energy. And yeah, for me, this is my first year as a pro and first Grand Tour, so to riding with the big boys, the big guys, the world stars, that's really inspiring and gives me motivation. Nice course, great atmosphere, so everything is really nice, yeah.
Do you think some guys paid for their efforts yesterday?
Yeah, definitely. I think someone did a nice tactic yesterday. Someone maybe used too much energy, but it's difficult to say. No, I'm maybe happy that I was not in the first group yesterday, but yeah, you never know. It's full gas every day here, so you just had to prepare for war the whole day, the last week here.
You must be believing now, though, that you can finish in the top 10.
No, I believe that I can finish top 10, but before the Vuelta, if you ask me, will you be top 10, then I would laughing and said, are you stupid? So we'll see. It's still tomorrow will be a hard battle, and of course on Saturday, and it's no time for get the focus away. I have to be 100% focused, and then we see in Madrid how it ends.
Well, stage 18 of Vuelta a España, and I'm currently with Orla Shinawy. The stage is still ongoing. We thought we'd recap yesterday's excitement because it was a cracking stage yesterday. Where are we, Orla?
We're in a sort of half a quarry. It looks like the rock behind us is a bit of a quarry, but it just kind of stops. So I don't know what they've been quarrying for.
I think that is I don't think it's half a quarry. I think it is a quarry. No, I mean, what do you expect, a hole?
Yeah, that's what. There's a quarry near me at home, and it's a whole quarry. It's a whole, like, you drive in, and the whole place is a quarry. This feels like the quarry's just stopped at that there's a concrete wall. It's like, what, 10 metres from the quarry wall to the concrete wall, and that doesn't feel like a quarry to me.
I would thought a quarry, by definition, is just somewhere where you quarry. And I think it looks like there's some quarrying going on here.
That's a quarrying spot. A quarry has to be a full quarry.
Well, if any
any
quarry experts out there, just get in touch. The usual channels.
That's a good quarry, though, isn't it? It's a quandary. Quandary. No, forget it.
Forget about a career in broadcasting for you, I think.
Quarry query.
Listen, the stage is ongoing. Our diarist, Nick Schultz, is up in the breakaway today, so really looking forward to hearing what he's got to say about that later on. We'll hear that later in the episode. I'll be joined by Daniel later to discuss today's stage. But Orla, yes, it was such a humdinger. I thought I'd come and find you in the technical zone here by the quarry. And well, it was a challenging day for you as well, wasn't it? Because you had to bring everything forward a bit.
Yeah, so we have a set on air time every day, and we back time from that essentially. So we get on site 2 hours before we come on air. We sort of give ourselves a half an hour, 45 minutes along the drive to get lost or to park up or whatever. And our whole day basically is timed around when we're going on air. So we turned up. I just had my hair and makeup done. I'm ironing my clothes when the producer said, actually, we can come on air, or we've got the world feed 30 minutes early because there's so much happening in the stage. We ended up, we couldn't come on 30 minutes early because then we've got to contact scheduling back at base. But they were able to get us on air 15 minutes early. So it was a bit of a rush getting on. And it was brilliant to do that because I haven't done that before with Eurosport, coming on air early because there's so much action. And it felt quite thrilling to be able to do that, and it felt like it was a huge stage and one that was worthy of it as well. And then of course the stage finished an hour earlier than we were all expecting, so it was just a bit of a whirlwind of a day, really.
Whirlwind, windy. It was windy. It's windy again today, actually, but I don't think crosswinds will be the fact today. They're back in the mountains. But it was such an exciting day yesterday, and made all the more so in a way because there was so much that we didn't see. We didn't see the kind of crucial moments of the race, which were the first few kilometres. And I mean, I love stages like that where you're still piecing it together the next day and, you know, hearing different stories from different people about exactly what happened and when it happened. And there's no consensus even now, even from the riders or the sports directors, about who made the move and when and how it happened. We're going to hear from Adi Engels in a moment, the sports director at Jumbo Visma. They had quite a kind of inquiry slash debrief into what happened last night. I spoke also to Rick Van Slick this morning, the sports director at De Koning Quickstep. What's that sign for, Orla?
Just the best name, Rick Van Slick. I love it.
Rick Van Slick, yeah. And he's quite slick. He was very good on how that team. And this reminds me a bit of BMC as a team time trial outfit. It didn't seem to matter which riders they had. They were always just really good at that discipline. And with De Koning Quickstep, it doesn't seem to matter which riders they have in any race. There are things that they do really well. And one of those things is you know, splitting up a race in crosswinds. And they could have a team of 8 different riders in another race and do exactly the same thing. There's something in the DNA.
There seems to be, because even James Knox said at the start of the stage yesterday he's not that good in crosswinds, so he's going to suffer all day. I mean, he was the first one, by all accounts, in that team to be putting the pedal down, and he was obviously up there all day. So I don't know what that is. I don't know whether it's a confidence thing, a momentum thing, like an awareness that that is part of the DNA of our team, and so we're going to do it. And knowing, I guess, that you can rely on the bulk of your team to be able to do it with you, because there's no point in trying to survive the crosswinds by yourself if you're the only one in the team. But such an impressive display by De Koning Quickstep, and I really love stages like that where they're all working together. I mean, I felt goosebumps. Just we had James and Philippe Gilbert on after the stage, and then listening to James Knox's audio diary on the podcast last night. I listened to it this morning, and I just got goosebumps about the, you know, just being aware of what that must feel like in the team, where you're just thinking, we bossed that today. It was a phenomenal team display, and it was a joy to watch, I thought.
And what's fascinating for me is that, you know, if James Knox was on Cofidis, not to single out Cofidis, but if he was on just about any other team, it's almost certain that he wouldn't have been in that move. And that's fascinating to me. I also asked Rick Van Slick if Max Richesi had got in trouble last night for not. He was the only rider in their team. And he would have actually been a great asset in that front group. Unfortunately, he didn't make it. Daniel thinks he was probably chatting to Fernando Gaviria. But Rick Van Slick said that they initially told Richesi he had to ride back to the hotel as punishment. And that, you know, that he's threatening to get him to clean the bikes and stuff. I think there was a bit of, I think it's a measure of that team's success on yesterday's stage that only one rider didn't make it. Phenomenal in the execution of that, but then also in the finale and the way that they finished it off. But it's a stage that we're going to be talking about for a long, long time. And I was very keen this morning to also get the reaction from Jumbo Visma, who really owe Astana a beer or two, because without Astana chasing, it could have been 10 minutes or so. And I spoke to Adi Engels, their sports director, this morning at the start about, you know, what they talked about last night, what he thinks happened. Here's what he said.
Just wondered what was said in the team last night. Was there a moment in the stage yesterday where there was panic or concern that the race might be slipping away from Primoz?
For sure, a lot of concern, yes. Because one moment we were out of control. And yeah, you never know which way it's going to go. One moment the gap went over 6 minutes. If the chase cracks, how do you say it? It can go over 10 minutes and then the race is over. For sure, it was a very stressful day with a lot of concern from start to finish.
Were you surprised? I mean, you know Quickstep very well. You used to ride for them. But were you surprised at how early that move went?
Well, yeah, because it actually didn't happen in the crosswind. It was before the crosswind part. So yes, on one hand, yes, but what's even a bigger surprise to me is that there was, because what you see most of the times when there is a split, especially at the stage of 220, one moment in front, something gets back together and then you have new movements, new moves. And now the situation was, I think after a few hundred meters, we had a situation. And it stayed like that until the finish for 220k. But on the other hand, it's something that happened, and we had a good debriefing and looking back, I think one of the most important things is that for sure Primoz should be in the first 30-40 riders as a race leader always. In the end, we got away with it. Yes, we had support in the chase in the final, but yes, there was also a lot of support for Nairo in the front. But that's also cycling. Everybody is fighting for their position. Teams are fighting to get their riders into the top 10, into a better position, fighting for podium. So that's how things go, and sometimes it works against you. And yesterday we were lucky that there was that the chase continued.
Well, Andy Engels there, pretty frank in terms of his assessment of where Roglic went wrong. And Roglic did say after the stage that he'd made a mistake. And Engels said, you know, if you're the race leader, you should always be in the first 30 or 40. And difficult to argue with that. And had Roglic been in that front group, it wouldn't have had the same intrigue.
He made a mistake, but almost everyone else really ended up making a mistake when you look at, on paper, at the stage results. Because I know lots of people are saying that Movistar did the right thing. They've now got 2 and 3, and it was really because Astana did the hard work that Movistar's tactic didn't work. I just don't agree. I don't think Movistar did play it well in the end, because if you look at it, yeah, they've got 2nd and 3rd, but they haven't really eaten into Roglic's time, and they could have done. He could have been under pressure today. He's not really under any more pressure than he was going into the stage yesterday. We spoke to Nelson Oliveira after the stage, and you know, I was asking him what was going on within the team, because he was up with Nairo Quintana, and he said, yeah, we still don't have a team leader. It's either Valverde or it's Quintana. But then he said, you know, they wanted to put Quintana in that front group. It didn't work, and so they worked for... they wanted to put Valverde in that front group. It didn't work, and so they're working for Quintana. And he said, you know, we think that Valverde's got better form. So it seems to me that they are really kind of backing Valverde more than Quintana, and that was the priority, really. And yeah, they were trying to distance Roglic, and if he'd punctured, it would have been perfect. And if Astana hadn't done their work, it would have been perfect. But that's relying on other variables. They could have gotten within 2 minutes, like maybe 1.5 minutes behind Roglic today, and contending for the overall race lead. And I'm sorry, it's just boring if they're riding for 2nd and 3rd. It just is.
Well, as we speak, Orla, Valverde and Quintana have attacked. They've got 2 minutes on Roglic.
Oh, we'll scrap that then.
I'm only joking. That's not really happened. But I spoke to somebody on another team this morning who have got a rider who's nobody's talking about, but he's still there. Tadej Pogačar.
Nobody's talking about him.
I mean, nobody's talking about him as a potential winner. Are they? Apart from Daniel.
No. A potential podium. I wouldn't say potential winner.
You know, who knows? I mean, they reckon that Roglic's showing some signs of tiredness. Who knows? I did speak to Pogačar.
So think focaccia.
Yeah.
Pogačar.
I'd actually managed to go through the Vuelta without speaking to Pogačar at any of the stage starts. So I went to speak to him this morning. Here's what he said. Are you surprised to find yourself in this position with just a few days of the Vuelta remaining?
Yeah, I am. I'm still surprised. But yeah, now I'm here, and now I will do everything that I get myself to Madrid in white or even in podium.
Do you feel as good, as strong as the guys that you're up against here?
I don't know, but I know for sure that we are all a bit tired now. But yeah, I feel good, and I hope I can do a good battle.
What were your expectations coming into the race? What would your ambitions have been?
I went here for just experience and to go day by day, but now I'm one of GC contenders, and I'm really happy.
You can win it.
Maybe, I don't know, but I think Roglic is really, really strong.
You like bad weather, or you don't mind bad weather? There's some rain forecast the next couple of days.
Yeah, I don't mind the bad weather. I always find myself in a good position when it's raining and cold, so yeah.
You're hoping for rain.
Yeah, for sure, but today is going to be really sunny, I think.
Tadej Pogačar there, saying hoping for rain in the next couple of days. Don't think you're hoping for rain, are you, Orla?
I know when you said this rain forecast for the next 2 days, I basically said, oh, bugger, doesn't suit my outfit choices for the next 2 days. I had plans.
Nor Pogačar's, he's in white shorts.
Well, I was going to wear a white t-shirt one day, so that's that gone. I was going to wear a miniskirt tomorrow, but yeah, I'll have to rethink that. There are all sorts of things to think about in a Grand Tour. It's not just the racing, you know.
Yeah, Pogačar has matched his white jersey with white shorts, which is controversial and could certainly be problematic in the rain. Let's see, shall
just
we?
Don't look.
Orla, I should let you get back to your day job. Thanks very much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off your Science and Sport products with the code SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. Stacey Snyder's mugs went on sale today and sold out, as they do, very quickly. She did it in two batches, both sold out. So lots of money raised for Andy's Man Club and the bike project. Thank you very much to everybody who bought one of these beautiful mugs, and hope you enjoy owning them. They should arrive very soon. We heard before the break there from Orla and me in a quarry near the finish today, sort of talking over yesterday's stage mainly, but today's stage, Daniel, you had something to add about Astana.
I'm loath to give more credit to Eurosport, and to mention Eurosport again. I mean, just coming off the back of Orla, but I was listening to Alberto Contador on Spanish Eurosport, and he was fantastic, incredibly animated. He had some great insight into, you know, the tactics today, and particularly Movistar and Astana and the positions they were in. And you know, talking about the fact that one guy in the break up the road wasn't enough. It was almost useless, because you know, if you have two riders in the break, this is the point he was making, that's not 100% better than having one guy in the break. That's actually 10 or 15 or 20 times better, because if two riders, two domestiques, you know, a leader bridges across the two domestiques, if they're working together and sort of giving each other turns, they can last a hell of a lot longer than they would ordinarily last if there was one of them. And you know, even if you multiplied the amount of work that one rider could do by two, that's not the same as having two or three riders up there. So you know, he was saying that Nelson Oliveira, who I think was up the road for Movistar, he was kind of useless at that point. And really what Movistar should have tried to do was put Marc Soler as well up there, which obviously easier said than done. And Superman as well at the finish said that, you know, they fought very hard to get multiple guys in the break. They only got one, and really that wasn't enough.
Took a while for the break to go today. So, you know, it was obviously hard to get into it in the first place. I mean, I mentioned earlier, you know, what a great result that was for Higuita today. And I spotted him warming up this morning at the start. I didn't see anybody else warming up, but you know, that should have been a sign, shouldn't it? There were lots of celebrations, jubilation really at the finish.
One thing I did notice, Rich.
Yeah.
As we drove out from the start this morning, we drove under a bridge. We drove under the race, effectively. The race was passing just as we drove past. And I don't know whether I suspect they'd already passed kilometre zero, or if not, they were reaching the end of the neutralised zone, and the flag was about to go. And the rider who was leading the peloton was Tony Martin. So Jumbo-Visma, I think, were very, very careful at the start today, because it was windy again, wasn't it?
And they put someone, Nielsen Paulus got in that move as well today. So yeah, very attentive. And tomorrow is apparently going to be potentially windy too. At the finish, I spoke to Ken Van Mark, a sports director at Education First, brother of Sepp Van Mark, and also Lawson Craddock. They were, you know, lots of celebrations there, very happy indeed. Here's what they both said. Ken Van Mark first, and then Lawson Craddock.
So Sergio warming up at the start today. There weren't many riders warming up at the start today. Was that a sign that we should have expected things from him today?
It means that a rider is really motivated when they do that. And yeah, he's also one of the guys that really thinks about every detail. And he doesn't want to make mistakes, and he's giving everything. So he really believed that this could have been his day. And after losing a lot of time yesterday, I think, he didn't want to let anything
get away from him. I mean, yeah. he went very early. Were you concerned that he had a long way to go when he went clear on his own?
Yeah, but I think there was no other way to do it. Like, he had to go, because we could see that they were coming really fast from the back, and I think that was the really right moment. He had to go. There was no other option. And just go and looking forward and not looking behind.
Some nervous moments in the car the last few kilometers.
It's really very stressful, and we're shouting and pushing and whatever we can do. Not much, but it was really stressful, especially if it's less than 30 seconds. Okay, you never know, especially with the false flat part in the end, how it's gonna go.
No fingernails left now.
No.
A team effort. I know you've been reduced in number, and there's a small band of you, so it must be extra special.
Yeah, for sure. We're all kind of back in the gruppetto, and when we started the descent, that's when Ken came on the radio and kind of broke the news to us. And I think all of us almost started kind of choking up at that moment. You know, it's been a really tough 3 weeks so far, with losing our three leaders. basically from the get-go. And you know, but I think it's just a true testament to our leadership that we have here with Juan Ma, with Ken, with Mitch, with the whole team, that we've just been able to keep that fighting spirit, keep that morale high every single day. And we knew that if we just really kept fighting, and that our day has been just incredibly challenging all across the board mentally. It's definitely starting to catch up to a lot of guys in the peloton, and it's not done yet. But I mean, you know, what Sergio did today was just, what a legend, you know.
What can you tell us about Sergio? He's obviously very talented and very young. What's he like as a teammate?
It's been great getting to know him over the last couple of months. I was fortunate to race with him in California and again here, and you know, he fits in really well with the team, and he is very young, and I think there's times that we've forgotten that, you know, just how he kind of holds himself in the structure of the team, and how he holds himself on the bike. So he definitely rides above that, and you know, I think this is really just a sign of things to come.
So that was the reaction from the EF Education First camp. Victory from the jaws of defeat for them, I think. That's a great consolation prize for them. And, yeah, another young Colombian, Higuita. He was started the season riding for Mikel Landa's team, the Euskadi Foundation team, and stepped up in May to join the World Tour. And, well, I mean, this is a race where riders, we've seen, you know, with Carl Frederick Hagen, is someone we've heard from already, riding his first Grand Tour. James Knox riding his first Grand Tour. Pog riding his first Grand Tour. You know, it is a race where guys like that can make some kind of breakthrough. And let's hear, actually, Daniel, from our diarists, Nick Schultz and James Knox. Nick was up the road today after James had been up the road yesterday. It was his turn to go in the break, and it's the first time we've seen him in a break at the Vuelta. So let's hear what he made of that. First Nick, and then James Knox.
Stage 18. Evidently, no one was tired after yesterday. So much the same battle at the start there. Took about 50-odd K after the first Cat 1 climb. I got myself in the move today. There was a group of 12 of us up the road. Worked reasonably well together. Basically just did what we could until they decided from behind that the race was on, and it kicked off. Lopez attacked early, and that basically exploded the race. By that point, I'd already been a little bit tailed off the breakaway and was riding riding a solid rhythm, and got caught by Lopez and Fraile in the valley between the second last and last climb. Ended up back at the front of the race with a very reduced group. I got piped quick again after that, and then went back to a group with Mikel and helped him to the line to try and limit some losses and gain a bit of time on some people behind. So yeah, it was another really tough day. Probably the toughest part being that I lost my favourite sunglasses at the top of the first climb. They were in my helmet, and I looked back and they just flew out. I immediately radioed in to the director to see if he could pick them up, but no luck. So yeah, they're very limited edition, those sunglasses. We each get a pair, and I don't think they make them anymore. So I've requested that they try and search all the bus, the truck, and see if there's a spare set kicking around anywhere. Otherwise, I'm just back to the standard shaped sunglasses rather than the retro ones. Another solid day, and tomorrow could be a sprinter's day, but I've heard that there's a bit of wind on the forecast, so we could be in for something a little bit like yesterday. But we shall see. Thanks for listening.
Stage 18, done and dusted.
Another tough one. Feeling it from yesterday. Pretty tired now. Starting to think of Madrid, to be honest. All out the first climb, and I suffered to hang in. But, you know, it was nice to see the breakaway going. Bit of relief. An easier tempo being set, and part of me was dreaming of a nice, easy ride to the line where the GC teams neutralised each other because people were tired. But it looks like these guys don't get tired. Astana went full gas again. Fair play to them. I did my best to hang in. Fought to the top of that penultimate climb and got into a nice group. Lucky to have some good guys personalities and riders to ride to the line. We did our best to limit losses, drop that one place in GC, but it's like a victory to still be here fighting. Pretty destroyed now, but a couple of days to go. Just leave it out on the road and hope for the best. Yeah, I don't know. Tough one, ain't it? End of the Grand Tour, uncharted territory. Just hoping I don't explode or anything, so fingers crossed.
Latest installments of our diaries there, Daniel. We heard from Nick Schultz and James Knox. James Knox, he was absolutely cock-a-hoop last night. He sounds in a slightly different frame of mind tonight, as if, you know, as he's kept saying there, Madrid is on the horizon, and he is certainly feeling... He started a Grand Tour before, he started the Giro this year, but didn't finish it. So this is the furthest he's ever gone, and doesn't sound sure that he is, you know, still has the strength to compete. Not so much tomorrow, although tomorrow could be hard, but Saturday's hard.
Interesting spectrum of post-race refueling tonight, Rich. I noticed Knox was swinging a can of Fanta. Pog was cracking open a bag of Haribos, huge bag of Haribo, and of course Rog, as discussed, he was downing an unidentified beer, non-alcoholic, we think.
Now, Daniel, I took advantage of the fact that Wout Poels was in the break today to speak to him at the finish and finally get an answer to the question that's been troubling me all Vuelta. Just whether
his breakaway
rumor.
Attempt was quite similar to the to the UK's breakaway attempt, wasn't it?
Oh dear. Oh well, let's see. I mean, I've been told that Wout Poels is obsessed by Brexit. Here's what he said at the finish. I need to ask you, we've heard that apparently you're obsessed by Brexit, is this correct?
Yeah, I follow the news pretty well, yeah.
You're watching it all the time?
Yeah, all the time. In the kitchen truck we have television, and they all the time put the cycling on, but then I put the Sky News on to follow everything, so yeah. That's quite interesting.
Rich, talking of hard borders, yesterday we discussed whether the Vuelta had ever been into Portugal. When was the date?
Tuesday.
Yeah, but...
You thought 2014.
Yeah, but were we told that that wasn't the case?
Well, 97 it started in Portugal.
97 it started in Portugal and it hadn't been since. I suggested that it might have gone in on the penultimate stage of 2014. It started in a border town. The map of that stage suggests otherwise. However, I think there were a phantom 5 kilometres that were actually in Portugal. Do you know why? Because a friend of the podcast, Chris Anker Sorensen, was riding that race. And he told me, it was either this morning or yesterday morning, no, it must have been this morning, that I think his teammate at the time was Sergio Paulinho, a Portuguese rider. And he was very excited about the fact the race was going into Portugal.
Well, there
so
we have it.
So, damn, you know, whatever the map says, it went into Portugal. That's it. The record has been set straight.
That sounds fairly conclusive to me. Daniel, just a word on where we're staying, the Box Art Hotel. This is a fabulous place. I mean, it's a beautiful building. It's got a restaurant down below, which looks lovely. We're going to eat there later. It's basically a hotel come art gallery. And the guy who owns it is Angel Garcia, who is an artist himself. And a lot of the works of art on the wall are his. There's also some sculptures from Javier Benito, who I'm told is a famous Spanish sculptor. You may be familiar with his work.
No, not really, but...
And also the South African painter Andrew Hollis. There's a lot of his work on the walls here as well. And it's all, you know, it's sort of laid out like an art gallery with... a lot of attention obviously given to how the pictures are hung and where they're placed and so on, and there's lots of sculptures, and it's really, really nicely done and a really beautiful place. We're very close to Segovia here, aren't we? Where the 1985 Vuelta finished. That was the famous ambush on Robert Miller. The race finished outside a distillery in Segovia, which is the hometown of Pedro Delgado. He won the race there effectively. And it finished outside the distillery, the first place ever to make whiskey in Spain. It started making whiskey there in 1983, I believe. So we're in that sort of territory, and we're just spending the next couple of days mincing around Madrid, aren't we? Before
we are.
Heading there. But tomorrow is very similar looking stage to yesterday. It's an uphill finish, yeah.
So prior to yesterday's stage, Philippe Gilbert actually thought that his best chance of a stage win between then and the end of the Vuelta was Toledo. So I think the race comes into town, and then I don't know whether it's the last sort of few hundred meters or so, sort of kick up from the river, and there might be quite a tricky finish. Toledo, of course, famous in cycling for being the birthplace of
the eagle
Federico Bahamontes, who I'm told is very likely to be at the finish tomorrow.
How old is he now? Is he the oldest living Tour de France winner? I think he is now.
Tour de France winner in 1959.
That's right, a long time ago, but still very lively by all accounts. And before we go tonight, just a few thank yous to friends of the podcast. Thank you very much for signing up as a friend of the podcast. Brett Matthews, Susan Ross, Gareth Edwards, Thomas Fritcher, Johnny Parker, Matt Leach, and Gerard Gilroy.
Sam Brown, Lewis Tulip, Gareth Jones, Martin Langridge, Patrick Hogan, Daniel Dench, James McKenna, Andrew Cook, and Jeff Wellings.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Rich.